Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. How did you enjoy your Mexican Independence Day celebration over the weekend, particularly if you were in the city of Chicago? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line. It is rather breathtaking to me that the Chicago police, and by that I mean the civilian authorities that direct the Chicago police, could have been so unprepared again for the Mexican Independence Day celebration. What happened on Friday night in particular is the same thing that happened last year, yes. Is the same thing that happened the year before. And yet the city was, in the greater downtown area, was completely overrun. Cops were completely overwhelmed. It was not safe. There was pandemonium, and I'm not just talking about the donut drag racing.
Two separate incidents of shots fired on Wells and Jackson. Rebels were attacking police officers, officers asking for shield cars. It was up for grabs. Person shot in the head at Kinsey and State. Another person shot in the back at Monroe and Wacker. Rebels are now throwing bottles and fireworks at police on Clark and Washington. This is just some of the 911 calls that were coming through. And it was so
Anita,
bad. That,
I mean, Anita Padilla tweeting out, Fox, Chicago. Two separate incidents of shots fired. Yeah. People shot right now from idiots acting like fools from 55th to 44th and Pulaski. Tons of shootings happening downtown, including Lakeshore and Columbus. On Wells and Jackson, revelers attacking police. Person shot in the head at Kinsey and State. Person shot in the back, Monroe and Walker. Revelers throwing bottles and fireworks at Clark and Washington. George Bliss, our friend who's always on the job, drag racing, brawls, street shut down, barricades, everyone, I-55 feeder ramp shut down, saw trucks blocking intersections, fed up top cops quitting. We'll get to that in a second. And he has the dispatch and the 911 calls coming in from every direction. And remember, this is a department that was unable to respond to more than half of the 911 calls in the calendar year 2021.
It was so bad that on Saturday, Mayor Lightfoot and Superintendent Brown thought if they had a 2:30 in the afternoon press conference that nobody would come down on Saturday night.
Blocking major roadways of transportation to do donuts is not safe. Lighting fireworks in the middle of the street is not safe. Honking horns and loud music till all hours of the night is not being respectful.
I mean, it was so bad.
Thanks for the instruction. Yeah, we know what's not safe. The question is, why aren't you addressing it? Why was there no proactivity? The top cops resigning. Ernest Cato.
I love him.
Why? Ernest Cato submitted his retirement from CPD on Friday. He served as chief of the counterterrorism unit, spent more than three decades with CPD, and was one of the highest-ranking officials in the department. He was a finalist for superintendent. My understanding is that Cato retired before he was disciplined for not being prepared for what transpired this weekend, that he didn't believe that there would be the sort of presence in the city that there was. And what you had is, and I was, by the way, I was in the middle of it on Friday night for more than an hour trying to get from the West Loop to the lakefront.
I remember last year, or was it 2 years ago, you couldn't get to your condo because
I couldn't get across the river
because
they put the bridges up. So I left the city to stay at a hotel in the suburbs. So this is the point, and that's a good example of it. How are you unprepared? How can a guy who's been around for 30 years not anticipate the kind of crush of people that was going to come downtown, as is always the case, particularly when you've given them carte blanche to do so? And I'm not talking about people or peaceful revelers. I don't care about the big flags out the windows and a little honking and a little music. Most of the people, fine, partying, whatever. But you also have a lot of people that use what's going on as cover to act poorly, to shut down Lakeshore Drive so they can, on southbound Lakeshore Drive, so they can do their donut drag racing, not to mention all of the violence that we were just ticking off.
Well, see, I don't like the fact that they clog up streetways and roadways and stop their cars and just turn, you know, a median into a dance party.
Well, that
bothers
me. Well, of course, but that shouldn't be happening because you should have police presence there to say,
get out of here, move it along. Yep.
Right. You should have police directing traffic in those instances, not just willy-nilly shutting down major arteries as you're trying to get a handle on it in real time, which all just creates more bottlenecks, not fewer. And then you got people driving the wrong way down one-way streets. You have people, as you just said, stopping in the middle of intersections and turning that into, you know, a Julie Brown hosted dance party. I mean, what the hell is going on? The hell is going on in the city? How do you not anticipate this? I ask again.
Here's Superintendent Brown.
Blocks ambulances, other emergency vehicles from growing in and out of traffic, delivering critical care.
I mean,
kidding. We know what the consequences are.
They had no answers. I don't know why they had the press conference. It was stupid. They thought that if they, you know, show force and that we're together, we're forming a solidarity against us, that it's not going to stop, that it would stop. But it didn't stop anything on Saturday night.
You know, the other thing, too, is with respect to a couple of years ago when they pulled the bridges. So they pulled it a couple of years ago. They didn't pull the bridges when it was summer of love in 2020 with the rioting. The bridges didn't come up then. So the entire place was overrun. And they didn't this time around either. They had previously, but they didn't this time.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 646-36, type in DA, then a quick
I don't know what you're to take away from this and all of the, you know, shooting at people is not safe. Shutting down the Lakeshore Drive is not safe. Loud music is not respectful. Thank you so much, kindergarten teacher. I don't know what you're supposed to take away from what you saw this weekend, or in my case, what you experienced, other than that these people are completely indifferent to your public safety. They're just completely indifferent. They're oblivious or openly hostile, somewhere in between oblivious and openly hostile to your public safety. You cannot allow a siege that occurred on the city like Friday night in particular that you know is coming and tell me that you're on the ball and that you're concerned. You have an after-the-fact press conference to wag your finger at people who were shooting and pillaging and blocking, and we're supposed to be impressed with your competence or your concern?
Well, we're supposed to be impressed that 7 people were arrested and 16 cars were impounded. Oof. I love Alderman Tabera. She wrote it best. As a proud Mexican-American, I'm outraged by the lawlessness and mayhem caused by people celebrating Mexican Independence Day. We lost control of the streets, downtown, and our neighborhoods. This is a result of consistent and deliberate attempts by local and state politicians to dismantle and restrict our police department, as well as institute policies and laws like the Safety Act and the No Pursuit Policy, among others. They embolden and validate this behavior.
Jim, Crown Point, I guess we get an outsider's perspective. Hey, Jim.
Yeah, I tried to get into work on Saturday night. I work at 60 East Monroe. I couldn't get within a mile of that building. This is her, Mayor Bolandic's deal. You know, he didn't do the snow. He was out. Let's see what happens to her. These Democrats shine a light on themselves. Why would you repeat your own ineptness, telling us Everybody saw it. Why would she even open her mouth?
Thanks for the call, Jim. Well, they're so used to doing the "I'm just as outraged as you are" kind of routine and pretending that they're not in charge. It's the great dissociative tactic of the left when they're in charge of something. When things go terribly wrong, they pretend that they don't have anything to do with it or couldn't have done anything about it. Mike in Midway.
Hey, good morning, guys. I was out in North Riverside on 26 in Harlem on Saturday night, and same thing. The donut crew was out there in the middle of the intersection, and, you know, it was just unsafe. Kids jumping out of cars. You know, it was insane. And then finally, police did arrive with a flatbed tow truck and took over the intersection, and they scattered like rats.
Yeah, but only to Thanks move on call, to a Mike. Different intersection.
Well, here again, I just go back to say, I know you're going to have some people that are overly exuberant in the moment. I'm just baffled by the complete lack of a plan to deal with what you knew was coming. I cannot say it enough. It was so scattershot. It was so ad hoc. You talk to cops that are turning people around, like as you're trying to figure out where you can get through, which, as I said, I spent an hour trying to do that.
How did you get out?
Well, I went lower Wacker, and then that got backed up, but then it got backed up at Columbus, but then doubled back, and then at some point, I got over the bridge from lower Wacker and was able to pick up Illinois, and then Illinois was clear going towards Navy Pier. But that was almost midnight.
Oh, my God.
I
thought they're going to take over Channel 7. They're all outside their studio,
but you have cops who have no idea. We were just told to come here and shut down Dearborn. They're scrambling, and I understand sort of the fog of war argument, but there's clearly like no plan to deal with. By the way, what they've had to deal with many times over the last 3 years, from the riots to big events like this, how many incidents do you need before you know what to do in preparation for such an occurrence? Michael on the South Side.
Morning, Dan. Morning, Amy. Thank you for taking my call. I would respectfully point out Mayor Lightfoot had a plan. She let some potential voters have their fun for 2 days and then act outrage afterwards. And she's simply playing politics. Inexcusable.
Thanks for the call, Michael.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Hey, business owners, is your business and money in good hands? Does your bank invest in your success? Hi, Mike Gallagher here, letting you know that when you need a relationship bank, Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. I love these guys. Not only do they have expansive industry experience, a strong financial track record, but they're also highly capitalized for strategic growth. That's so important. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. They know what it means to grow a business by designing solutions that are right for you and only you. These are real people. They're ready to help. So reach out to my friends at Signature Bank. Make the call today. 773-467-5630. 773-467-5630. Or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Your business could be Signature Bank's next success story. Go online, signaturebank.bank. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. Signature Bank.
Larry Elder, Brandon Tatum, Alex Berenson, and many more at Freedom Summit Chicago. Tickets available at freedomsummitchicago.com.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So on Friday, two county state's attorneys, both Democrats, Will County State's Attorney Jim Glasgow and Kankakee County State's Attorney Jim Rowe filed suit against the state, alleging that the so-called Safety Act contradiction in name, of course. The no cash bail, the release violent people charged with violent crimes right back onto the streets legislation that Governor Pritzker signed into law, takes effect January 1 statewide. They argue that it is unconstitutional, among other failures. It's sort of a technical legal failure. It violates the single subject rule that legislation may contain only one subject at which it's tackling. Without getting into the details, this is a way to sort of, you know, end run it taking effect. They're seeking injunctive relief pending a full hearing on the constitutionality of the Safety Act. Let's hope they're successful to slow this thing down, because the General Assembly doesn't seem to want to. Although what's also happening, so you know, they'll never admit it publicly, but there's talk of, after the election, in veto session, making some reforms to the Safety Act. But it will be tinkering on the margins at most. And you have some Dem state's attorneys that are trying to run interference for the regime, for Governor Spaulding, by, you know, we're working with, we've got this working group of state's attorneys that are working with state legislators to improve the legislation. You can't improve it when it starts from a fundamentally flawed premise. And the fundamentally flawed premise is that police should be completely reactive and people charged with serious crimes should enjoy the presumption of release pending trial. So you can dress that up any way you want. That's the problem here. And then you get into the particulars that flow from that, those two premises, and it just gets more and more absurd. Thus the suit, Democrat state's attorneys. And a reminder, 100 of 102 state's attorneys, county state's attorneys in the state, opposed the legislation. That would include, at the time, 26 of the 28 Democrat county state's attorneys in Illinois at the time it was passed. So all of the bloviation you hear about fear-mongering and racism and propagandizing and untruths being circulated, don't tell it to me. Tell it to those 26 Democrat state's attorneys who opposed it at the time, and all the county sheriffs and police chiefs that did as well. Those are the facts that Pritzker and Lightfoot are trying to direct your eyes and ears away from. Why? Because the more people are talking about the lawlessness they have engendered, the worse it gets for those two politically as they both face re-election. That's why.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 646-36, type in DA, then a quick comment.
Former Riverside Police Chief Tom Weitzel, he weighed in on this. He retired last year. We told them it wasn't a good idea back when this was being quickly moved under cover of darkness in lame duck session.
And they voted in the middle of the night.
I think it was just a knee-jerk reaction to what happened in Minneapolis, and the politicians want to say Illinois is the first state to end cash bail. This is former Riverside Police Chief Tom Weitzel speaking, not me. I don't want Illinois to be a social experiment. You don't experiment with criminal justice. Lives are at risk. He went on to say, among the things that are problematic, specifics, the change to the electronic monitoring system. Oh boy, we've had a lot of conversations about that in Chicago, haven't we? Suspects with GPS ankle monitors not considered to be in violation until they're missing for 48 hours. And then police can confirm they're unaccounted for and they can begin to search for them. Weitzel saying that can be a week or more before police realize someone is gone, and then the 48-hour clock starts. All three of my sons are police officers, and they've made more arrests for serious crimes to DUIs where the suspect has the electronic bracelet on their ankles. It shows they're still committing crimes. Oh boy, does it. An 18-time felon.
Sorry. Tell us what happened.
An 18-time felon who failed to return home after being given permission to leave the house for 8 hours while on electronic monitoring told authorities that his ankle monitor had been badly cut.
Oh, wait, can I tell him why?
Yeah.
Because he fell into the CTA train or fell on the train tracks and the track cut the monitor.
Yes.
On his ankle.
Uh-huh.
How many times have you heard that story, Dan?
And because, here's the story, you know, this trying to take a provision of this law and make it real for people, as if the violence in this city is not real enough. Because of the Safety Act and the requirement that the person on electronic monitoring be AWOL for 48 consecutive hours, this guy will not be charged with escape. He's only going to be charged with felony damage to government property for slicing and dicing his $800 ankle monitor.
That's how much that's cost.
This guy has been arrested by Chicago police 26 times since 2014, four times this year. And he's on electronic monitoring. There's so many questions here. It's hard to know where to begin. But you're going to listen to Pritzker and Lightfoot tell you how the Safety Act is designed to keep predators behind bars. That's what it's really designed to do.
Yeah, they keep saying, oh, it's good. You know, rich people can't bond out. It doesn't matter if you're rich. Everyone's on the same playing field. You can be rich, you can poor. Doesn't matter.
Let me introduce you to number 38.
Oh, no.
A three-time felon on bail for one of Illinois' most serious gun crimes, opened fire on a Chicago family's birthday celebration, shooting a 12-year-old boy in the head. A Cook County judge had made him pay $1,000 to get out of jail on a Class X armed habitual criminal charge last November. No electronic monitoring for him. That would have been onerous. On Friday, this guy became the 38th person accused of killing or shooting or attempting to kill or shoot someone in Chicago while awaiting trial for a felony just this year. Those crimes, 38 people have committed, have resulted in 76 victims, 18 of whom dead. The Safety Act is designed to keep violent criminals behind bars awaiting trial. It's designed to do the opposite. And the culture in Chicago and Cook County is showing you what it's designed to do. Because they're doing it even before the law, and have been before the law takes effect, thanks to Lightfoot, Fox, Preckwinkle, Evans, Pritzker. You can screech about the Scream ad all you want, and that's what they're doing. And the other ads I've run and what people like me are saying, because we're conservatives, and so it's just easy to, again, try to direct people's attention away from what is happening as a direct result. They are the proximate cause for what is happening in Chicago and Cook County and will happen around the rest of the state, effective Jan 1, if the law is not enjoined per this suit filed by Will and Kankakee Counties. They are the proximate cause. So, of course, focus on being offended by an ad. Focus on people that you disagree with politically telling you what's true. And pay no attention to all the Democrat state's attorneys and the police chiefs and people who actually know what they're talking about because, you know, they're practitioners in the space on a daily basis. Pay no attention to the stories that are just documenting the facts like CWB Chicago provides, which is where I was reading from with respect to number 38, because they've been doing this series since last year. It was more than 70 last year. We're at 38 this year. Hundreds of people who've been victimized because the system did not keep a mostly habitual violent offenders behind bars awaiting trial for felony charges.
And I watched I know Dana Kozloff interviewed you, I think it was Wednesday or Thursday, but on Saturday they replayed the segment. And the way she spoke to you was so condescending, but you handled it beautifully.
Considering victims' advocates.
I don't need the permission.
I know you don't need it legally, but ethically, considering victims' advocates also say that its use, the use of that video was abhorrent in this purpose.
Like I said, when everybody's sensibilities are such that they're not going to broadcast acts of violence, then you can come back and talk to me. But until then, nope. Yeah. So these moralizing Democrats who parade as journalists, like Dana Kozloff, who, by the way, I mean, I can post her voting record if you want to see it. Every Dem primary for the last two decades. She's a Democrat.
Yeah, she's a Democrat.
Like they all are, of course. So all the news stations use the footage of that woman who was robbed in Lakeview.
Yeah, I saw it repeatedly on every single station. It aired on Labor Day, and there's a lot of news, and that was in the A block on every single station.
They didn't search out the victim.
No, they didn't.
Before they ran it, but they suggested I should. Then they took money from my PAC to run the ads. They didn't search out the victim and ask her. But I should have. Then they got a response from the Democrat overlords, right? Their bosses, because, I mean, they're just the comm shop for Dem politicians in the state. Then they pull the ad. And then you come, you see them, you know, essentially doing damage control by trotting out some, you know, room temperature intellect like Dana Kozloff to, you know, preen about, you know, what the news does as a public service versus what you do as a political operative. Ooh, ah. Go pound it. Go pound it. This is what you're dealing with. By the way, Greg Gutfeld picked up the ad and this whole controversy.
Oh, good.
On his show on Friday night, opened with like a 15-minute commentary on the lawlessness that has beset major cities, starting with Chicago. And it was a little, you know, you had to sift through some Gutfeld shtick, which, regardless, when he got to the substance of it, pretty good riff right here. Take a listen.
It's escapist entertainment. So you want a really scary movie? How about this one? It's scarier than anything Hollywood puts out. It's a doorbell video of a woman being attacked by three men on a Chicago street. And it was turned into a campaign ad made by a conservative super PAC. Here's just a tiny bit of it. Now that's a horror movie. The only difference is there was nobody there to yell cut to end the scene. And it's upsetting all the people you'd expect. The media and Democrats, for example, don't like it when you show them the results of their disastrous ideas. In fact, they're more upset about the video than the crime itself.
Yep.
Maybe they'll try to censor it and call the makers terrorists. And why? Because every time you point out crime, you're pointing out how these liberal mayors have failed you. And that they have no solutions other than hiring their own private security. They'll make a federal case over pronouns while dropping attempted murder cases to misdemeanors. The governor called the ad disgusting. And why? Because it's real and politicians like him aren't.
Yeah. The ad is real and politicians like him, Pritzker, and I would add Lightfoot, aren't. Exactly. Jim in the Grange, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, Dan, Amy, good morning. So I was flipping through channels watching football on Saturday night, and I ran into that Dana Kozloff interview. What a disingenuous partisan hack she is. She makes you look like an idiot and that, like, you're a mean, angry white male, and that's just totally false flag planting. And not only that, but at the very end, they take their high and mighty throne, and they're like, we're not going to show you the ad, as they go through and make you seem like a jerk. I found it absolutely horrendous.
No, of course. Thanks
I
for the call,
Jim. I didn't think you looked bad. I thought you held your own.
Well, I said to her, I said, sure, come on, you come. I'll sit down with you for your hatchet job. I'll have my say. Because you know what? Anything talking about this, talking about the ad, talking, maybe vilifying me, I don't care. Anything that gets people talking about crime, because somebody says something about the ad and then somebody else is going to talk about crime. anything that gets people talking about crime, I'm for.
And my police,
including vilification of me, and so I knew it was going to be a hatchet job, and I knew what she was intending to do. Fine, whatever.
Well, anytime people can see that video, somebody knows something, because the police they told me that that trios could be responsible for up to 15 similar crimes in the neighborhood.
Lee, Southside.
Show the pictures.
Hey, Lee.
Lee.
Hey, good morning. Sorry about that. Did you hear my name first? Yeah, the system was broken at first. It was broken because defendants of multiple arrests in a 21-year Chicago cop still got out on low bonds relatively. The system was broken because without holding them accountable and having attorneys that are going to be paid, they're not going to ever go to court. And then with the scamdemic, it just got worse because of the Zoom trials and everything else. So if they think this is the answer, it's without being too hyperbolic, come January 1st, there's going to be a big spike in crime. And it's going to level off a little bit, but it's going to level off high. It's not going to level off and drop back down low. And thanks for doing what you're doing, because in about 7 months, I'll be south of the Red River, south of the Red River, and this is somebody else's problem.
Hmm. Thanks for the call, Lee. I mean, again, Jim Glasgow, end of days. You know, not, I mean, you got people, I see it online, referring to this as the Purge Act, you know, based on the movie. So, you know, it's penetrating.
Kids know about it. It's on TikTok and Snapchat.
Paul Marengo.
Yeah, good morning. I was just going to say thanks again for what you're doing also. And Facebook is on the case. They're already censoring posts about the Safety Act.
Yep.
They are?
Yeah.
I got a good one yesterday saying that they're not going to turn murderers and rapists loose. I think they're fake news, but have a good day.
Thanks for the call, Paul. Ralph Rantoul.
Hi, good morning. I have a question and then maybe two questions. So, number one, all these police chiefs and state's attorneys who oppose it in the counties, 100 of 102, I would find it interesting if they also came out and said, look, you know, not only are we not going to make arrests for ordinary citizens who have decided to concealed carry guns to protect themselves, we're not going to arrest them. And if the prosecutors say, yeah, you know what, and if it's used in self-defense of a crime, we're not even going to bring charges, because it's really the only way to battle this statewide, people being able to defend themselves, because Illinois is still very difficult and slow to get a concealed carry permit. Maybe that's a dumb idea, but I think it would, I don't think it would be, because I would be concerned as a regular dude or dudette if I hadn't bothered to get a concealed carry permit by this time. Like, how do I protect myself after January 1st?
Yeah.
The follow-up question is, I really mean this, all right? So it's not just flippant. Are Pritzker and Lightfoot, are they just so evil or so stupid or all of the above? How could anybody believe that this is a good idea? Does Pritzker understand anything he reads?
Thanks for the call, Ralph.
The
appreciate it. I tell you, I mean, this shooting that happened in West Loop or outside Aberdeen Tap.
Yeah.
And the woman who shot, vote these clowns out of office or we will all be paying the price for the next 4 years. Amen.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Hey, business owners, is your business and money in good hands? Does your bank invest in your success? Hi, Mike Gallagher here, letting you know that when you need a relationship bank, Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. I love these guys. Not only do they have expansive industry experience, a strong financial track record, but they're also highly capitalized for strategic growth. That's so important. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. They know what it means to grow a business by designing solutions that are right for you and only you. These These are real people. They're ready to help. So reach out to my friends at Signature Bank. Make the call today, 773-467-5630. 773-467-5630. Or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Your business could be Signature Bank's next success story. Go online, signaturebank.bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender. Signature Bank.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, Mr. 10%, the big guy, President Biden at the Hispanic Caucus Gala, took up the topic of border security and the busing and flying of migrants. No, not the busing and flying of migrants by the administration. Only when it pertains to Republican governors like DeSantis and Abbott does it get addressed.
Instead of working with us on solutions, Republicans are playing politics with human beings, using them as props. What they're doing is simply wrong. It's un-American. It's reckless. And we have a process in place to manage migrants at the border. We're working to make sure it's safe and orderly and humane. Republican officials should not interfere with that process by waging a these political stunts. It's long overdue for Senate Republicans to come to the table and provide a pathway for citizens, for dreamers, those in temporary status, farm workers, and essential workers. We need to modernize our laws so businesses get workers they need and families don't have to wait decades to be brought back together. It's time to get it done.
Yeah, you understand the message? You don't like the open borders? Well, grant everyone citizenship who wants to come.
Huh? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment.
Yeah, that's how it works. That's how it works. You don't like it? It's always the gun to the head. Yeah, it's always the, you know, you got a nice country there, you got a nice community there at the border. You want to protect it? Well, yeah, then you better get on board with our program to provide citizenship to everybody who's come illegally and everybody who seeks to, I suppose.
In El Paso, which I know we talk about a lot, 2,000 a day are coming to his city. So he's a Democratic mayor. We're trying to get him on the show. And he's busing them to New York because he has, we can't do this by ourselves. If we're all in, let's be all in together.
Eric Adams was asked about that on This Week with Jonathan Carl, mayor of New York City. He was asked about that. 11,000 since May in New York.
It's nothing for me.
2,000 a day in El Paso, and you're overwhelmed. Do you start to get a bit of a sense of what communities like El Paso are dealing with on a daily basis?
11,000 migrants that have come to New York since May. But look at what we just heard from the mayor of El Paso. The other day, they had 2,000 in a single day. How is it that New York City is overwhelmed when it's a fraction of what we're seeing on the border?
Well, what's happening, a playbook that many of the Republican governors, DeSantis and Abbott, are using is now to ship those migrants out to other states, particularly a place like New York. As you saw the mayor of El Paso indicate, that when you have sponsors, it's an easier transition. If we would have properly coordinated with the governors in these southern states and stated, let's find where the sponsors are. We have large Venezuelan communities in America. Let's coordinate in that fashion like we've done with other large communities we have in New York City.
Was that an answer to the question?
No, it was not an answer to the question.
And a follow-up that Jonathan Carl didn't ask. God, if I ever get one of these programs, I mean... These Democrats, they wouldn't come on because they'd have to at least attempt to answer questions they've never been asked.
Follow up?
Coordination. Abbott should coordinate with you. Who does the El Paso mayor get to coordinate with?
Nobody.
Is the El Paso, is the Venezuelan government, is the Mexican government, are they taking the same approach? So you understand what you're imposing, you and your sanctuary city state devotees, you understand what you're imposing on these communities at the border? And you're bitching about their lack of coordination with you? Who do they get to coordinate with for sponsors and the like?
The homeless shelters are packed.
Where is the federal government to coordinate with El Paso? Forget Abbott for a second. Coordinate with local communities that are being overrun by the open borders, de facto open border policy of this administration.
Well, here's a great example. Eagle Pass, Texas has a total of 22,000 residents. Guess how many came into their little tiny town in July? 50,000 just in July alone. And even Democrats, they're like, we got to do something.
What do you make of the busing situation?
I'm glad they're moving them up there. The United States government needs to do something. We say that we are, that the border is secured. It is not secure.
And he's standing in front of a gate on his property, which is part of the border that has been torn down and nobody's built back up.
And you have to understand, even if they're not necessarily ideologues like Eric Adams, who's just like a show pony.
Oh, yeah. Now he wants to bring in a cruise ship to store, you know, all these illegals in.
So he's a show pony hack, okay? But he is beholden to the ideologues in his socialist party. And this is why you get a response to a question like this, like you got from Eric Adams on sanctuary city policies.
Do you have any concern that policy is attracting more people to the border, more people to cross the border to make that dangerous trip?
No, not at all. This city has always been a sanctuary city, and we've always managed those who wanted to come to New York City to pursue the American dream. Let's be clear here. We've all come from somewhere. Our lineage came from a location, and the pursuit of the American dream is what we've all fought for. It could be done correctly by making sure people legally enter the country, and we coordinate in a proper way, and that's what we are stating.
You just said sanctuary city policies. You just offered your support for sanctuary city policies, which is the definition of refusing to coordinate with the federal government. Coordinate, coordinate, coordinate. We're a sanctuary city. We don't coordinate with federal law enforcement. Find that ironic at all? I do. And come in legally. What does it matter, legal or illegal? What are you talking about? Doesn't matter, you just said. Yeah, we've all come from someplace, and we have a great history of legal immigration in this country. Right, I mentioned it last week. I'll mention the stat again. But when they came through Ellis Island, Mayor, they did so legally and were processed. And when they did, from 1892 to 1954, that was 1,900 people a day. And you're overwhelmed by 11,000 over...
A month?
Three months.
Oh, yeah.
Almost 4 months. What are you talking about? You don't know what you're talking about. You're taking an ideological position because you have to for your party. These are not pragmatic problem solvers. They're ideologues and essentially marionettes for ideologues like Eric Adams. Understand that.
Everyone should read the Daily Wire, an article. Welcome home now. Get the hell out. This is the best line. For 24 hours, residents on Martha's Vineyard proudly lived out their yard sign creeds, proclaiming hate has no home here, as they welcome 50 illegal aliens. On Friday, the governor activated 125 National Guard troops, that's two per illegal alien, and put them on a bus and took them to a ferry and got them off the island. So they were there for less than 48 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they just don't have room at the inn in Martha's Vineyard.
Yeah. And too much. They're here. What do we do?
I like
call the governor, get him out of here. So they bust them to the ferry and got them out.
I like the Babylon Bee news reporting on this. Been very good. Martha's Vineyard takes revenge on DeSantis by shipping him 50 Karens. By the way, you know, there's something else to this, too. I mean, here we try to cover the wide range of issues on a particular topic. So, the way the federal government does immigration is full of problems. including the length it takes to become a citizen. I've said this before. That should be expedited. Including the length of time it takes to adjudicate asylum seekers. We don't have the resources to do better than this. According to Syracuse University, asylum seekers across the country wait an average of 810 days for initial hearing. The average tops 900 days in New York State and 1,100 days in New York City. There's no reason that it should be taking 2 and 3 years to get a hearing on your asylum application. That's a failure of, well, the federal government.
Right. And then you got JP whining. Well, why can't they send them to other states?
Why send these folks only to blue cities or blue states? Why isn't Abbott
because
sending
sanctuary cities and
to
sanctuary
states
or
Oklahoma?
That's why.
Or Idaho.
Simple.
He wants them sent to Idaho, Mississippi, Oklahoma.
Are you not paying attention? Why? Because you said
we're a sanctuary
state. You said come one, come all on your terms.
Because we're a sanctuary state, county, and city, dum-dum. Hello?
Chris Barrington.
Good morning. Happy Monday. We got to keep track of all these illegals, either chip them or ankle bracelets or something, because they've all got to be thrown right back over the wall when the time comes, because we cannot handle this many people, and most of them are here for bad reasons, and they're going to be taking our jobs. And there's just, it's costing us so much money, we have no idea, and I don't feel like paying it. I don't feel like paying for them. I don't feel like paying for Ukraine. I don't feel like paying for any of the stuff our government's got us paying for.
All right, thanks.
Thank you. Y'all have a good day.
Thanks, Chris. I mean, Muriel Bowser, she's the mayor of D.C.
Not all criminals.
Muriel Bowser of D.C. had this to say, comparing and contrasting D.C. to Texas when it comes to having to deal with an influx of migrants.
We're not a border town. We don't have an infrastructure to handle this type of a level of immigration to our city. But we'll create a new normal here in our infrastructure and have a humane welcome for people and an efficient, service provision. But we don't have the ability. We're not Texas.
What does that even mean? The seat of the nation's government doesn't have the infrastructure to handle this, but El Paso does? What the hell are you talking about? The Rio Grande Valley is just overwhelmed with the resources at their disposal. We're not Texas. We're not El Paso. What are you talking about? You have the federal government. The D.C. metro area is one of the richest in the country.
Just think of Eagle Pass, 22,000 people, and 50,000 came through just in July alone. Doubled their town's population.
Phil, Northwest Side.
Good morning, guys. In my opinion, this whole thing's a continuation of NAFTA, and it's appalling to listen to this president talk about how Republicans are using people. The Democrats have used people in their entire existence in war, in unions, in labor, legal and illegal, in the drug trade, in every form of taxation, in every regulation. It's absolutely appalling to listen to him. And in my opinion, it's just another continuation of NAFTA.
Well, thanks. Well, the other thing, too, I said at the outset. So just help me. The busing or flying of people, voluntarily, by the way.
Yes.
To Martha's Vineyard.
They were informed of their destination.
To D.C., to Chicago, to New York City. That's improper when DeSantis or Abbott does it, but it's fine when the federal government does it, when they do midnight flights to communities around the country. Is there a great deal of coordination with governors and mayors when that happens? Well, according to DeSantis and Abbott, no, because they called it out when they learned it was happening, and they were not being notified by the federal government.
Yeah, but it was okay when Biden did it, but now they're doing it, it's not okay.
So you'll have to explain to me this one-way street and this, again, moralizing about using people for this or for that, using people for politics, when Republican governors do the same thing that the federal government has been doing to them. Miro, West Humboldt Park. Hey, Miro.
Hi.
My comment is this. Instead of 87,000 IRS agents, 87,000 Border Patrol agents to handle this invasion. Because if Trump runs, which I hope he does, I voted for him before, I want these illegals out of here. I don't care how long they've been here. They knew they were breaking the law when they come here. They should be deported because they are breaking the law even now. And again, they know they broke the law when they crossed that border. That's the end of my comment, sir.
Thanks for the call, Meryl. Yeah, but the problem is if you repurpose, instead of 87,000 IRS agents, you hire 87,000 border agents, who are you going to have to audit all those IRS employees who haven't filed their taxes?
And they still have their jobs. They'll get to it eventually, Dan.
Tom and Oswego.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. I don't mean to laugh because this is such a serious problem. First of all, Dan, when I listen to these excerpts from these mayors, my head literally explodes. As I said before, we truly are voting the most stupid people as our leaders. As I said before, my daughter lives in Mexico. She lived in Puerto Vallarta for 5 years, married a Mexican citizen, had a baby there. He can't even get – now, he got his passport, which allows him to travel to some Latin American countries, but he can't get a visa to come visit at Christmas time during birthdays. This is ridiculous.
Yep.
And President, when I hear President Biden and some of these politicians say that they just want the Republicans to work with them, that is bull crap. They don't want anybody to work with them. All they have to do is follow the rules and follow the laws that are on the books. That's all they have to do. They don't have to create new ones. They don't have to do anything and secure the border. If our vice president wants to grant them all citizenship, believe it or not, I'm for some pathway right now as long as they stop the leak in the pipe.
Well, that's
ridiculous.
Thanks for the call, Tom. Here's the thing about it, too. I mean, that's just a good juxtaposition. Your son-in-law is married to your daughter, wants to come visit the in-laws for the holiday, so on and so forth. He can't get a visa. And repeat violent offenders who are in this country illegally, we can't get out of this country. In part because you have sanctuary jurisdictions that won't cooperate with federal law enforcement. So square that circle for me. We've said this so many times because we cover this topic so many times. It's just everything about the way this is set up, about the approach that is taken, at least when the left is in charge, makes no sense. And when Republicans have been in charge, they haven't made enough progress on the law enforcement side, the processing side, so that you can set a base to maybe rethink how we do immigration more generally. I mean, there were efforts made, obviously, by Trump with respect to border security, and that's laudable. But the good guy who wants to visit his in-laws
can't get a
visa to come for the holidays, and we can't get bad guys. We can't get people who've committed violent crimes out of this country because of the open border policy. That's about as biting a commentary as I can offer. Heather and Joliet.
Good morning. I just had to say, my husband's family are immigrants. My family's been here a long time. My husband's family are Ecuadorian immigrants. They did come here for a better life. They did it the right way. My in-laws are extremely supportive of the program for bringing in people from other countries. However, they are so angry about what is happening at the border and the fact that they worked so hard to do it the right way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's like a slap in the face to people like them. They've been here since 1973, but they really, really had to work hard to go through the process. And like you said, it is a ridiculously long process to get citizenship. They were here so long before they were granted citizenship. But, now they are, by and large, conservative, voted for Trump. They believe in securing the borders. And so I see it from that way because of my family. However, when I hear things like these Martha Vineyard people saying, oh, it's inhumane busing people up here, where there's no opportunity, I think, what opportunities do they have in places like Texas and Arizona where there are thousands and thousands of people? There's no jobs for them there either. No. They're saying in Martha's Vineyard, oh, there's no opportunities, there's no jobs, there's no resources. really, because what most of them end up doing is standing on a corner begging for money, which they can do in Martha's Vineyard just like they can do in Arizona or Texas. It's not like there's all these jobs waiting for them in these states where they're coming in, but there's not in Martha's Vineyard. So there's, that's not the problem. They just don't want to give them, they don't want to see them on the street corners, basically.
No, they're not going to allow that. Martha's Vineyard in Edgartown? No, no.
Ecuador, I've been to Ecuador. It's a beautiful country. Yeah. I like the, you know, especially if you get up into the Andes Mountains.
When were you in Ecuador?
Oh, this is 25 years ago. Yeah. Guayaquil, Quito, and then we went up into the Andes Mountains. It was fun.
Who's we?
Me and this guy that I went to high school with, who has a hat shop, Optimo Hat.
Oh, okay. Because
he would fly
good
to Ecuador to go get hat bodies that were made by villagers in these communities in the Andes Mountains. It was a fun trip. Yeah. Fun trip. Before long, the way that Illinois is going, I may wind up back in the Andes Mountains.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. America First with Sebastian Gorka. Today at 3, right before Sean Thompson at 4 on AM560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Mr. 10% sat down with Scott Pelley for an extended interview for 60 minutes last night.
Yeah, and in case you haven't heard, the pandemic's over.
Yeah, I heard. Somebody tell JB.
Yeah.
He also talked to some geopolitical issues. Among them, whether or not the United States would commit troops to defend Taiwan in the event that the Chinese communists invaded Taiwan. And here's what the big guy said on that. His answer, so curious that Scott Pelley asked him to repeat it.
What should Chinese President Xi know about your commitment to Taiwan?
We agree with what we signed on to a long time ago. And that there's a one China policy, that Taiwan makes their own judgments about their independence. We are not moving, we're not encouraging their being independent. We're not, that's their decision.
But would U.S. forces defend the island?
Yes, if in fact there was an unprecedented attack.
After our interview, a White House official told us U.S. policy has not changed. Officially, the U.S. will not say whether American forces would defend Taiwan. But the commander-in-chief had a view of his own.
So unlike Ukraine, to be clear, sir, U.S. forces, U.S. men and women, would defend Taiwan in the event of a Chinese invasion.
Yes,
this is great. Thanks.
After our conversation with the president, someone from the White House called us to tell us, don't listen to that guy.
Yeah. It's like the Easter Bunny when they try to get him away from members of the media.
For more on that, pleased to be joined by Lieutenant Colonel Jim Carafano, VP of the Catherine and Shelby Cullum Davis Institute for International Studies at the Heritage Foundation, author of the book Brutal War, Jungle Fighting in Papua New Guinea, 1942. Jim, what are we to make of the president disagreeing with his administration?
Well, they're all a bunch of yahoos. Look, the reality is, yes, the U.S. would defend Taiwan. And the reason for that is Taiwan is the critical island in the first island chain. And if the Chinese owned that, they would pretty much be able to lock us out of Asia. So, yeah, we would defend it. Here's the problem. Look, I don't care what the president says. Here's the problem. If you look at his strategy, which, oh, by the way, we don't have a national military strategy. We don't have a national security strategy. And if you look at his plans for defense investment, he's doing everything possible to ensure we wouldn't actually have the capability to make that threat a reality. And the Chinese pay attention to what we do, not what we say. And the most dangerous situation possible is to not have the obvious capability to be able to meet our military commitments. This is what got us into the Korean War. This is what cost us thousands and thousands of lives, that cost the South Koreans almost their freedom and many, many tens of thousands of lives, because people doubted that we could do what we said, or as you know, Maverick says that, you know, you're writing checks that you can cash. So I have no problem. I could care less if the problem said we'll fight to defend Taiwan. That's the reality, and the Chinese know that. What I do have a very, very serious problem with is he has no defense planning, no defense strategy that makes that an increasingly serious issue for the Chinese. So even as he's saying that, militarily, we're every day under this president, we are less and less capable of doing that. Now, we are getting increasingly diverse and focusing a lot more on having electric vehicles for the military and making sure everybody uses their proper pronouns.
Yeah, that's important.
But we're not scaring the Chinese.
That's important. I'm sure the Chinese are flummoxed by that. But even if the reality is that we would defend Taiwan, I mean, what kind of presentation does that give to the world, including the Chinese communists, when you have a president disagreeing with himself?
Well, look, it just goes to show what everybody already knows, which is that this administration is a clown show. Look, I mean, their big thing is the adults are back. You know, responsible people are in charge. Responsible people abandoned Afghanistan. Responsible people couldn't deter an invasion of Ukraine. Responsible people took Pelosi's visit to Taiwan and turned it into just a ridiculous road accident. So everybody knows that this administration is one of the least competent foreign policy administrations in modern history. And so I don't think last night's interview was like a big surprise for them.
Well, speaking of Ukraine, you recently were in Ukraine and met their president. And what did you learn from your trip?
Well, I mean, it was a really great trip. And I will say, you know, when you meet Zelensky up close and in person, he is very serious. He is very well informed. And he is a really committed. When they asked one piece of advice, my advice was don't do any more boat covers. But
yeah.
Look,
That bit he did on that variety show where he sings with his penis.
Yeah.
You shouldn't do that one either.
No.
Yeah.
I said, look, Americans want to support you, but they need to see your serious side. This is not, you know, this, who's ever advising you that this is helping is, it's not, it's helping. And you need to talk about what you're doing and your commitment to good governance and battling corruption, because Ukrainians know it's a problem and Americans know it's a problem, and they need to know you're taking it seriously, even as you are trying to fight the war. So that was a really productive conversation. But I would say, look,
how did he respond to that advice and counsel?
He nodded, you know, and you know, actually everybody in the room, just kind of, yeah. Okay, message received. You know,
right.
So I do think that they know that that kind of stuff might, you know, make leftists really happy. But what you're doing is you're really endangering the bipartisan support in the United States, because they need to see that you are a serious leader, because we are dumping in millions and millions of tax dollars, and Americans want to be reassured that that money is going to a good purpose. And he understood that. Look, on their side, they've got a tough situation. The day we left, they found another mass grave. And it's another reminder that whatever you think about anything, Putin is a global actor. He has no scruples, no morals. He's a dangerous person, and unleashing him on the world is not a good thing. I will tell you, there wouldn't be a Ukraine today if it wasn't for U.S. military aid. Everybody knows that. Ukrainians know that. The Europeans know that. There's going to be a free and independent Ukraine, mostly because of the United States. And I wouldn't credit our president, because honestly, he was dragged into this. He would have just ducked his head the other way if the Ukrainians hadn't actually demonstrated the willingness to fight. But now what I really worry about is, you know, Ukrainians can win the war and lose the peace, because when you move into reconstruction, If this just becomes another typical, everybody just write checks and dumps money into it, you're going to get an aid-dependent, corrupt country that's actually going to be more vulnerable to the Russians. And so, you know, we've got to get reconstruction right. And the people that are always in charge of this, they always screw it up. And I think that was my one message to the Ukrainians to take really, really seriously. The international finance communities, big NGOs, you know, governments like Biden, what they're going to tell you to do is make governments more dependent on foreign aid and not going to give you the kind of country that you really want. So,
yeah, that's good advice. The recent history is replete with examples of what you're talking about. And so with respect to Zelensky, what and where things stand. What is your sense? You know, you talked about they win the war and lose the peace. So where does the war stand?
Well, I mean, they're on the offensive, and winter is coming, and that means two things: is the land they grab, they will likely be able to hold on to. The Ukrainians know how to fight in the winter. They've been doing it for 8 years. Very, very difficult for the Russians to muster a major counteroffensive. Incredibly difficult to do that in the winter. So I think Ukraine is going to be in a strong place, going into the winter. But, you know, this country is going to have to defend itself for a long time. And so the one thing I definitely would say is military aid is really, really – we saw no signs whatsoever. And actually, I've been unable – and I've had my guys really dig into this. There's no evidence that military aid has been misdirected or misused or, you know, resold or whatever. They're putting the military aid to good use. And it's the – and that's, you know, that's the non-negotiable, right? You cannot defend this country. You can't rebuild. You can't hold out the Russians.
All right.
You can't have a future. So that's super important.
The incentives are aligned there. They need, I mean, you said that, you know, they need this military equipment. They need it to be used for military purposes to save themselves. So that's the perfect alignment of interest. What about the meet that Putin had with Xi? Do you see any new threat emerging with the combined their combined forces?
Well, I actually thought it was not a good look for Putin. I didn't think he got very strong reassurances from the Chinese. As we said, I think I've said on the show before, the Chinese will do anything they can do to help the Russians that they can't be held accountable for. They're not going to stick out their neck for the Russians. Mm-hmm. And as a matter of fact, the Russians are dragging them into things that are making the Chinese position look more difficult and weak. So the Russian allies are not helping them, and they're really becoming more of a basket case. And even on the oil front, so they're getting cheap oil. Well, honestly, China stockpiled pretty much all the oil it can use, and their economy is slowing down. So they don't even need the cheap oil, and they can't get Russian gas because there's no pipeline. It'll take 5 years to build a pipeline. So there's not much the Russians can do for them except, you know, cause them agita, as my grandmother would say. And I think there's less to the relationship than meets the eye. Putin's in a tough place. I don't know if you've been following this, but first of all, they're pretty much out of military reserves. They're having difficulty replacing the equipment. They're fielding T-62 tanks. That's three generations back of tanks. They are Azerbaijan and Armenia are fighting. Armenia is a pawn of Russia. So there's fighting in the stands. So the Georgians are talking about taking land back. The Russians are having pressure on every single front. And he's got domestic things. So this is not the bright, shiny day. And China is not the white knight that's going to come in and save the Russian Empire.
What about the pressure that Putin can put on Western Europe? Speaking of cheap energy, the burgeoning energy crisis in Western Europe and Russia as an actor that is position to help alleviate it if the Western Europeans wanted to lean on them.
I think that's increasingly less likely. They're almost off of Russian. Almost everybody in Europe is off of Russian gas. They've been stockpiling gas. Yeah. Well, it's been expensive, but they've been stockpiling gas, and there's enough to get through the winter. I think that's already been established. Now, are prices going to be high? You bet. And is that going to cause some economic? But I don't think I don't think there's more the Russians can do, and I think the Europeans can get through this.
He is Jim Carafano, VP of the Catherine and Shelby Cullum Davis Institute for International Studies at the Heritage Foundation. Jim, thanks as always.
Oh, it's so nice to be back, even virtually. Nice guys.
Thank you. Good to see you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
You've made the switch, and it feels so good. You've switched to Chicago's morning answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's morning answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So Governor Jelly Belly and a lot of pro-abort socialists are attempting to make this election cycle about the Dobbs decision, well, about abortion, and from their perspective, abortion on demand all 9 months, taxpayer-funded, and no notification to mom and or dad.
No, they don't need to know about an invasive procedure. No.
Spent a lot of money running ads, hitting Bailey for being pro-life, as Governor Pritzker thinks that's how he can maintain support in the suburbs, even as the suburbs are soon to disintegrate along with the city if the Safety Act goes into effect January 1. But nonetheless, that's his play. And so it requires a response, a counter response, actually, to be specific. And this, I would suggest, is worthwhile for Republican candidates in Illinois and around the country to listen to, because you can't just allow somebody who is an extremist to put that label on you unchallenged. Dr. Brooke Bellow is a survivor of human trafficking. She is not, I mean, she does not identify as a conservative. She received a Lifetime Achievement Award from President Obama. She was designated as a hero by United Way Worldwide for her work against human trafficking, against girls being trafficked. And she's featured in a TV spot that my PAC produced that is on the air starting today.
My name is Dr. Brooke Bellow, and I'm not a political figure. I'm a survivor. When I was a young girl, I was trafficked, drugged, and raped. The traffickers forced me to have multiple abortions. Last year, I begged Governor Pritzker to preserve the right of parents to know if their daughters were about to undergo an abortion. Governor Pritzker didn't listen to me, but I hope that you will.
And the spot ends just with the words, "Protect girls, repeal Pritzker," the way he repealed the Parental Notification Act. It seems to me this is a very straightforward binary. And it's as much about parents' rights as it is about the issue of abortion. An invasive medical procedure on your minor daughter. You want to know about it? You want to be surprised, or do you want to know about it?
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment.
And it's strange because this was the law in Illinois for the better part of 18 years before it was actually enforced, because, you know, in this state, like any state dominated by the left, if they don't like a particular law they inherited, then they just ignore it. That's what Lisa Madigan did. And then they moved last year, feeling their oats, to repeal parental notification. This is an aspect of this issue that's supported by overwhelming supermajorities of families, including in Illinois, nationally and including in Illinois, which is why it's strange to me the advice and counsel that some give is, you're not allowed to talk about this. You're not allowed to talk about abortion. You're just supposed to sit there and be pilloried about the head and neck area by extreme pro-abort ideologues like Pritzker and say nothing, lest somebody come back and say, well, they're going to say that you don't support women. They're going to say whatever they're going to say. What are you going to say? I'm so tired of listening to Republicans and even conservatives say, well, they're just going to say, yeah, I know what they're just going to say. We all know what they're just going to say, because they just say what they're going to say on everything, no matter what you say. So why don't you focus on what you should say? This is, you know, ripped from the pages of John Wooden. Don't worry about what they're doing. Worry about what you're doing. If we execute the way we should execute, it won't matter what they're doing. If we can speak with moral clarity on an issue where, for goodness sakes, 70% plus of Illinois families support us, then it won't matter what they're doing. And that's what we should do. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line. 64636, DA, turnkey.pro, text line. Well, what about, well, you're taking attention away from crime or taxes? People are animated by a variety of issues. They have viewpoints on a variety of issues. They're paying attention to a variety of issues. They can process more than one concept over the course of a political campaign. They can process the Safety Act and the lawlessness that no cash bail will engender. They can process a guy who tried to increase your income taxes and you rejected that proposal. So maybe why don't you reject the guy who proposed it?
That seems pretty. Or reject the person who locked your kids in the basement for 2 years.
Pretty
straightforward. Away their sports.
They can talk about COVID. Right. You can have a conversation about COVID. And you can also have a conversation about this issue, particularly with the tens of millions of dollars that Pritzker has put behind it. Why don't we take the opportunity to flip the inertia that he's generated back upon him?
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. You could also reach us on our text line, 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment.
All this stuff, all this these histrionics about abortion from Pritzker and the pro-abort left, these commercials he has with people are pretending to be Republicans like Marcy Love from Winnetka. You know who Marcy Love is, by the way, just as a quick aside? No. Marcy Love has been on the board of Personal PAC and a huge Planned Parenthood supporter since I started in politics 25 years ago in this state. Give me a break. Spare me. Talk about lying. Talk about fact-checking. All the great fact-checkers over at the network affiliate, make sure that nothing improper gets on their airwaves, right?
We don't want to hurt anybody's feelings or make them scared.
Of course not. You know, and so this is what it comes down to. So for your friends running around, rape, incest, blah, 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 this is Illinois. The only issue that is germane that could even happen to move off of this absurd and obscene abortion on demand, all 9 months, taxpayer funded. I mean, remember, you have socialist countries like France that ban abortions after 12 weeks. That's not going to happen here. You're not going to have a heartbeat law here. You're not going to have abortions banned, rape and incest, coat hangers, and having to fly away. Come on, get a grip. Ridiculous people who say that. The only thing that may possibly change at some point in the indeterminate future, if you changed out the leadership of the Illinois General Assembly, and I mean including the Republican leadership in the Illinois General Assembly, maybe someday you could restore parental notification. You could restore something supported by 70% of Illinois families. Maybe someday. That's the only thing that's germane. So here you go. Here's a choice for you. You had this dilettante of a governor who repealed your right to know about a invasive surgery that your minor daughter has. And Darren Bailey would restore parental notification if he became governor and if the General Assembly changed and if that it would be possible. Again, something supported by a supermajority of Illinois voters. That's extreme. Who's extreme? Who's extreme on the issue? And who's pragmatic on the issue? Parental rights. Nation and Aurora, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning. Anyway, I tried to call that number that you could call and voice, you know, your opinion about parental notification, and I could never, ever get through. I called tens of times. Anyway, so, but Pritzker, I think she is offering a scholarship to nursing students that would aid in, you know, the provision of abortions. And one final thing, there's many things, but this, I offer to my sons, do not date girls with their knees set apart like a cowboy.
Okay. Thanks for the call, Nation. Yeah.
Wow.
And on the dance floor, leave enough room for the Holy Spirit. Absolutely.
Wow.
Oh, right.
Okay.
Exactly.
All right,
let's Frank in Arlington Heights.
Good morning. You know who else never answers her phone or you can't get through is Tammy Duckworth. I've tried calling her office on various different issues the last 2 months, and all it is one big voicemail, month after month. But on this issue here, you know, the Democrats want to get rid of equal rights under the law, the 14th Amendment, They want to get rid of our Republican form of government, and now they want to get rid of contract law. I do not understand, for the life of me, how you can have a minor engage in a contract like this. That's basically what it is. I mean, you don't have the capacity to go buy a car if you're a minor.
Uh-huh.
You know, how can you go have capacity to go and get and go and get an abortion without your parental consent? I mean, it's absolutely nuts. So, I mean, we talked about this in entrepreneurship. What are the five elements of a contract? Consideration, capacity, offer, legality, acceptance. If you don't have capacity, and we talk about that in class. What are the reasons you don't have capacity? Well, okay, mental incapacity or, you know, something where, like, you're insane or something like that. Or you're a minor. How is this remotely legal in terms of contract law?
Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for the call, Frank. I mean, that's what I say. This is a straightforward real-world issue as opposed to the fantasy issues that they're trying to suggest are at bar here. Just a little bit more Brooke Bello, because she's not, when she says in that commercial that she implored Governor Pritzker not to repeal parental notification last year, she means it. She was here. She testified. She made arguments. She offered this.
Why wouldn't someone, unless it's an emancipated youth, why wouldn't someone give the opportunity for that youth's parents to be notified? How can a parent absolutely raise and guide their child? Why would someone want to keep such a profound thing that affects the womb health, the life through that, throughout that child's life, keep such a profound secret? I mean, I was raped at 11 years old. I started being trafficked as a young teen. Our traffickers made us get abortions. Had my parent been notified, my mother would have known what city I was in. She would have known what street I possibly would have been near. She could have contacted law enforcement. And then the mitigation of the issues I suffered my entire life being happily married. Not just the issues with endometriosis and other aspects of womb health, but because I was so young, my doctor, even as an actor with really good insurance, at a young age, didn't understand that I had issues related to previous abortion. It wasn't until later in life that my gynecologist said, oh my God, what happened to you when you were young? Had you had any abortions? And when I expressed I had abortions, it was one doctor that said, this is why you've been trying to have children for years and have had miscarriage after miscarriage after miscarriage and other issues with my health related to that. And so we have to notify parents, not just because of trafficking, but a young girl could have been date raped, raped, trafficked, the grooming process, all the different fears that a trafficker puts inside of her head to say, now you can't go home because you're pregnant. You know that many, many, many victims that we serve at More to Life have had to have abortions. And all I ever wanted was to be loved, to be married, to have three children before I was trafficked. I knew that I was going to have three kids. And they're in heaven. I've had so many miscarriages. I'm sure I have many, many children. And so I ask the public and I ask the Illinois legislature, why would you want a child to keep something secret that's going to affect the rest of her life?
I'm sorry, who's the extremist?
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. America First with Sebastian Gorka. Today at 3, right before Sean Thompson at 4 on AM560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, just noting what you heard Mike Scott reporting that this morning, it's being reported U.S. Navy veteran Mark Frericks, who was kidnapped in Afghanistan 2 years ago, was released by the Taliban in exchange for an African drug kingpin serving a life sentence in the United States. So Frericks had been working as a contractor in Afghanistan and was apparently exchanged at the Kabul airport with this drug kingpin. So, I mean, it's good that an American is coming home. We'll keep you updated on that story as more details become available. Wanted to note that, though. Yesterday, Mr. 10% was on Scott Pelley's 60 Minutes. Talked about it a little bit ago with Jim Carafano on the national security, foreign policy aspects of what he had to say about China, about Russia and Ukraine. What about domestically on the economy? Here's what the big guy said about inflation.
Inflation rate month to month was just up an inch, hardly at all. And we're growing the economy. It's growing in a way that it hasn't in years and years.
How so?
We're growing entire new industries. Right? 695, I think it is, or 85,000 new manufacturing jobs just since I've become president of the United States.
Yeah, we are growing the economy in a way that we haven't in many, many years, because in previous years, we used to see GDP growth that would indicate economic growth. Now we see GDP contraction. That's the way we're growing the economy, by contracting. Growth, or contraction, I should say, is now growth. Just adding to your lexicon of words that don't mean what they used to mean. For more on all of this, pleased to be joined by Don Boudreau. He's an economist, author, professor, and co-director of the program on the American economy and globalization at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University. Don, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Always a pleasure.
Contraction is the new growth.
Well, I mean, yeah, these political spinmeisters are very good at what they do. Although Biden is, of course, slipping up in his old age. You know, he talked about inflation being under control, and he was praising himself that it didn't blip up even further. It's still running at a 40. Even Scott Kelly recognizes it's still running at a 40-year high, and Biden just dismisses all that. And of course, yes, the economy, since he's been president, since January of last year, has rebounded somewhat. That's because it was coming out of the depths of this government-imposed massive unprecedented shutdown. And so when you take off those breaks, something positive is going to happen. Biden had nothing to do with that benefit to the extent that it was a benefit. And of course, his so-called Orwellian-named Inflation Reduction Act is it will only add to inflation. It will only suppress growth over the long run. We are in an Orwellian world in which these leaders, so-called, say whatever they want, and they expect the little people to swallow it all. But it's very discouraging.
And it just ticked up a bit, just one-tenth of a point from July to August, from July when he declared we have no inflation, to August where he concedes we have the CPI is 8.3%. But that's just a little bit, but it's not a little bit when it comes to power costs for Americans, specifically electricity, which in August was 15.8% over August of 2021. So as we're moving into the winter months for much of the country, that turns out to be a real budget issue for a lot of middle and lower middle income families.
Just a half an hour ago, I have a 25-year-old son who's in graduate school in New Hampshire. And he sent me a text. He said, "Dad, guess how much my electricity bill is this month for August?" Last August, it was $315. The bill he just got was for
$590.
And I told him, his name is Thomas. I said, "Thomas, you just wait for the summer, for the winter months, because it gets very cold, of course, in New Hampshire. It's going to be even worse."
Yeah.
This is an inescapable consequence of the policies that this administration is imposing.
But I mean, Don, your son wasn't calling for an economics lesson.
He wanted money.
Yeah, send me money, Dad. Preaching. Just send me money.
What am I supposed to do?
I'm kind of waiting for that. But he was just complaining because he was stunned at how much higher the electricity bill is.
Well, people are going to have to make sacrifices, though, and decide what their true needs are. And I don't see this stopping anytime soon, because I about near have a heart attack every time I go to the grocery store. I don't get it. With gas prices going down, you think that food prices might slowly start trickling down. And instead, they're heading in the other direction.
Well, as gas prices start coming down, and then people have a lot of the extra spending power unwisely injected into the economy over the past few years by both the Trump administration and administration had been spent on rising fuel costs. Now that people still have that spending power, now it's going to be spent on food, causing the price of food to go up. You cannot increase spending power in an economy without increasing output correspondingly and not suffer inflation. That is what's happening. And, of course, we're not increasing, as Dan said in the intro here, we're not increasing output. Output is stagnant or even falling in some sectors, certainly in the energy sector. But we have all this extra spending money, and that is driving prices up. It's inevitable. But these people in Washington, they keep telling themselves, and hence they keep telling the rest of us, that there are no trade-offs. We can have everything we want. We can have greener energy. We can have, you know, COVID lockdowns. We can have injections of additional spending power into the economy, and there'll be no bad consequences. It's just nonsense. These chickens are coming home to roost.
I think Denver may have cracked the code. Denver is providing 140 people experiencing homelessness.
Okay.
Like I experience a roller coaster. Experiencing homelessness.
Temporary event.
$12,000 with no strings attached. Part of a program to test universal basic income. So if it works with these 140, maybe we could scale it to 330 million. It's great. The money comes from.
From what?
Where do you think it comes from? The American Rescue Plan. Just more goodness from the printing press. Pay for cash installments. The rest will be allotted for administrative costs. $9 million to provide 820 people to help 820 people in total with 140 homeless getting the $12,000 with no strings attached. So this is part of homeless in part, and then there's this other aspect of the of provision of funds for others. That's where we need to be. You know, we need to be innovative and creative with creating programs that provide universal basic income for the homeless, since they're most in need, and then we'll get up to people making less than $200,000 soon enough.
Yeah, you know, of course, this is called creative, Dan. I know you're using that word sarcastically, correctly so. It's called progressive, but this is the creativity and progressivity of a five-year-old. If you ask a well-meaning five-year-old, how do I help that poor person over there? The five-year-old naturally says, well, give that person more money. Give them stuff. It's understandable from a five-year-old. Unfortunately, we get this from adults, and not just adults. We get this from adults that have political power, and it is naive. It's childish. But that it's the norm these days. It's the norm. So it's as I said earlier, it's just discouraging.
Yeah, I mean, they segmented the groups because these are people are deep thinking. They've got real specifics here. 260 people get $6,500 up front, $500 a month for 11 months. 260 people get $1,000 a month. 300 people will be part of a control group. They get a $50 a month stipend to determine whether there's a difference in outcomes. I think you could probably find a parable in the Bible that will tell you how this works. But anyway,
it would be comical if the consequences weren't so severe and dire. And I unfortunately, maybe it's because I'm in the academy, so I have a very, I'm with the worst of the worst, but I don't see the attitude of Americans improving on this front. Of course, there are a handful of sensible people, your listeners, but not many. A lot of people just believe now in the tooth fairy, in Santa Claus. If only government prints more money, gives out more money, then all will be well, and then we'll do these little experiments. We'll look at, what happens when we give these people a stipend and those people not. And it this gives the appearance of it being scientific and well thought out. But, of course, it's not. It's just giving away other people's money, or worse, printing money or borrowing money from generations yet unborn, hoping that there won't be any ill consequences. You do not build a prosperous society by making people dependent upon state handouts. You just don't.
I wonder if anyone's going to monitor
the direction in which we're moving.
Yeah, how they spend. If they give them $12,000, Dan, are they going to monitor to see how they're spending that money, or have any say?
These are significant. These are deep thinking policy people. These are researchers. I mean, this is going to be very rigorous, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
It will not be.
If there's one thing we know government does, Don, it's always connect the dots. It's always connect inputs to outputs. They never just focus on inputs.
That's right, and they never just focus on the superficial and the very first consequences of an action. They always follow it through to the end to see the full consequences. That's exactly what governments don't do. I guess unfortunately, I suppose we can say the ultimate blame lay with voters because people vote for these clowns, but I don't think it excuses people in power with political power who are elected to office. I don't think it excuses them from the moral culpability that I believe they bear. They are the ones actually carrying these policies out. They are the ones printing the money. They are the ones borrowing money from generations yet unborn. They are the ones who are encouraging irresponsibility in the populace. But unfortunately, too many of them keep getting reelected to office.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I mean, I think, you know, you have to start by blaming the person who's committing the fraud, and then you have to maybe have a conversation with the people that keeps falling for the scam and say, why don't you stop doing that? But you wrote about this recently, too. I mean, this is sort of an evergreen topic, but I mean, I can't think of a better environment in which to remind people about it. But it's Bastiat's dissertation on the seen versus the unseen. And this is the problem that free marketeers always run into. It's, you know, it's like the universal basic income thing in Denver. I'm giving you a check. What are they giving you?
That's right. And that's easy to see. What's not easy to see are the perverse incentives created by that. What's not easy to see are the resources taken away from the taxpayers and future generations who are funding. Well, in that case, it's probably not future generations, but taxpayers who are funding this stunt. That's what it is. But it gets good press, and of course, people at the New York Times, people at the New Yorker, they all praise this because it looks so enlightened and charming and caring. But it only looks that way because you're only looking at the very surface. You pierce behind the surface, and what you see are all sorts of dislocations and unfortunate consequences. But these enlightened progressive people, they don't want to do that. They remain enlightened and progressive precisely because they refuse to look at anything but the superficial phenomena.
He is Don Boudreau. He's an economist, author, professor, and co-director of the program in the American Economy, on the American Economy, I should say, and Globalization at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University, also Cafe Hayek, cafehayek.com for Don's musings on these and other topics. Don, thanks as always. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Hear about the big stories of the day, then talk about them right here on Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
So that drag queen bingo program that was scheduled for the Downers Grove Library that got canceled because of
alleged
residential. Well, there was residential opposition. And then, of course, the library said it was the result of some threats that were ill-defined. We had communiques and filings from the Downers Grove Police Department, you know, indicating like some one crank on Facebook who lives in Alaska said something silly. But I mean, it was hardly some, you know, an unsafe environment that the Downers Grove police couldn't handle if the library had chosen to go forward with it. But they didn't. Why? Because they want to wear the cloak of the victim. And by the way, there's these emails going back and forth between the library officials about how they were going to handle drag queen bingo and what they were going to say to the public if there was any opposition. So they were game planning for this because this is something that they're not allowing to happen in a public setting. This is something that they're promoting because it's part of a political agenda. Don't think so? Kathleen March is the manager of Anderson's Bookshop, Downers Grove. Whether you acknowledge it or not, there's a large LGBTQIA community here in Downers. If you don't acknowledge it, it doesn't mean it's not here. It's a lot of noise from the right as a way to try and continue to make themselves relevant in a world where they are no longer relevant.
Oh.
Huh. Kathleen March, Anderson's Bookshop. I hope people in the suburbs are paying attention because Anderson's has a big footprint in the suburbs, not just Downers Grove, but Naperville. And they sponsor talks. So Anderson's bookshop, what would be interesting, given Kathleen March's viewpoint that conservatives aren't relevant in this world, what kind of openness, since, I mean, this is all couched in tolerance and inclusion. Yeah. And
hate
so, but,
has no home here.
Of course. What kind of
sign in front of her?
What kind of offering that you get from Anderson's books on the topic? And by the way, I also understand further Downers Grove in terms of attaching consequences. Anderson's bookshop in Downers Grove is partnering with St. Joe's, which is a Catholic school, for a book fair. I think it's coming up like as soon as this week. Why would St. Joe's partner with Anderson's bookshop, given the attitude of Anderson's bookshop's people about, well, about Catholicism by definition? By the way, the books showcase in the window display at Anderson's, if you're a drag queen and you know it, as well as Mighty Red Riding Hood, a fairly queer tale. But this is just about allowing for the full panoply of literature to be considered by the public. It's not a narrow and purposeful cultural agenda at play. And that's fine. You're entitled to have those opinions. You're entitled to promote those titles at your private bookstore. Doesn't bother me. But then you're going to mau-mau anybody who would respond with some disagreement about that, about sort of time, manner, place appropriateness when it comes to this sort of material. So flying off of what we were just discussing with respect to this contretemps in Downers Grove, pleased to be joined by Kara Dansky, president of the U.S. chapter of Women's Declaration International, which seeks to promote the Declaration on Women's Sex-Based Rights. She's also the author of The Abolition of Sex, How the Transgender Agenda Harms Women and Girls. Kara Dansky, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me.
You said recently that my party, I'm quoting you, has been pushing this gender identity agenda in law and throughout the society, and it's terrible for women and girls. Who's your party, and why is it terrible for women and girls?
Thanks for asking. So I registered as a Democrat the day I turned 18. And I'm still a registered Democrat. I'm a feminist. I've been a feminist for as long as I can remember. And I want everyone to understand that there is a leftist feminist critique of so-called gender identity, also known as trans. And the entire agenda harms women and girls in the sense that so-called trans means that violent, convicted male rapists and murderers can be housed in women's prisons with vulnerable women. It means that men can be allowed to enter women's spas, women's domestic violence shelters, rape crisis centers, and bathrooms on the basis of their so-called female gender identity. And we could go on and on. It's invading sports. It's invading women's spaces all over the country.
And, you know, I mean, so there are other sort of self-described radical feminists. I mean, one of my longtime favorites is Camille Paglia, who have been making this point for the point that you just made, making this point for some time. And I wonder how what kind of responses you get from inside the castle, if you will, maybe that are not always made public. Like, so what are people who maybe agree with you, they're on the left or center left, they agree with you on some other issues or you agree with them on some other issues? And then what do they say to you when you offer this critique?
So the mainstream Democratic Party will not talk about this, but I promise listeners that there are rank and file Democrats all over this country who are up in arms about what's going on, but we can't get a voice in most media outlets, which is one of the reasons I appreciate you having me on. MSNBC won't talk about it. NBC, ABC, CBS, The Washington Post, The New York Times will not air the leftist feminist critique of gender identity. They won't talk about it because it doesn't serve their agenda.
Yes. Well, is it enough for you, though, to switch parties and say, you know what, maybe we had a good run and I'm going to become an independent or a Republican?
I know so many Democrats who have done exactly that. Most become independents. I know a handful who have become Republicans. I will not do that because I am staunchly in favor of abortion rights on demand and without apology. So I will not become a Republican. But I cannot tell you the number of times I have considered the possibility. I've downloaded the voter registration form and ticked the box for I and not submitted it. So I remain a Democrat. But nonetheless, there is a lot of rancor within the party. And I know so many women and men, but mostly women, who have just left the party because of this issue.
Yeah, you know, the so you heard us talking about this this local issue, and it's an issue that plays itself out in communities around the country, so it's nothing new. But this local issue in a suburban community of Chicago and Chicagoland, and you know, this is presented as what you know is sort of what's the problem. And it's the same thing with sort of the gender, queer, trans books that are used as part of school curriculum that are in school libraries. And as I said, it's about time, place, manner. It's not about book banning, but they try to sort of couch themselves as these, you know, freedom oriented people, and they're not. But so what do you think is the real play here with drag queen bingo and drag queen story hour and gender queer and these other very explicit books that are intended by some of the LGBTQIA crowd to be for kids as early as kindergarten? What's the agenda?
It's a real problem, and you asked a lot there, and there's a lot to unpack. But I do just want to say that increasingly, lesbians, gay men, and bisexual people are speaking out about the use of the word queer, because that word was a slur, and that word was used to harass, antagonize, torture, and often kill people who are same-sex attracted. So increasingly, members of the LGB community are speaking out against this, and that's just really important, because it's important to understand that the inclusion of the T and the rest of the letters was forced teaming. The gay rights movement, for the most part, didn't ask for this, and lesbians and gay men are speaking out against it. In terms of drag and story hour, I think it's really important to understand that this is just hypersexualization. And if libraries and schools presented women behaving in that hypersexualized manner, it would never be allowed. But men, you know, acting as though they're hypersexualized women, which is, of course, a lie, they're men, somehow this is allowed and championed and celebrated as some sort of freedom. But it's really not. It's just regressive sex stereotypes.
And so, how did this take hold? I mean, you have this Twitter group that popped up, Gays Against Grooming, and then it got shut down. So by Twitter, of course, you know, so you have this argument going on from a lot of different angles, but the perspective of the advocates is always to shut down questioning. You call people like me a bigot or a homophobe or transphobe, whatever, and then you just try to ignore like people like you or Camille Polly and just push them aside because you're allies on some things but not on other things. So we want to sort of keep them in the fold. But, you know, what does it say about where sort of the left is today?
I mean, I don't want to say it's the left because the political left will still the actual political left will champion free speech. The problem is that Democrats are not behaving in ways that are appropriately left. It's the Democrats who are being authoritarian in terms of shutting down speech. And isn't it telling that the only tool they have is to shut down speech? Because if they had a compelling argument, they wouldn't shut down speech. They would be quite happy to have the argument out in the open. But you're right. All they have is to shut down speech. They tell us to shut up. They tell us that we're bigots. And it's ad hominem attacks. But it's not a persuasive argument. I don't know if any of your listeners happened to see yesterday in Brighton in the United Kingdom, a group of women wanted to gather and talk about women's rights. That's all they were there to do. And a massive mob of Antifa wearing black outfits and masks tried to invade them and get them shut down. And they just chanted things like, I don't want to use profanity on your show, so I won't. Yeah. But they just chanted a bunch of profanity and ended up getting arrested. But they didn't have any persuasive arguments. They didn't come prepared to actually have a conversation. If anyone wants to have a conversation with me, I'm happy to have it at any time. And I presume you feel the same way.
Yeah. You know, Andrew Sullivan said this a couple of years ago. You know, we're all on a college campus now, and many commentators have picked up on that. And talking about what happens at college campuses doesn't stay there with the cancellation of speakers and the, you know, the safe spaces and the triggering and all this silliness that's used to squash, you know, free exchange and or free expression and the exchange of ideas and so forth. So how do you distill it? You think it's just there's a group of people who don't believe in peaceful pluralism. They're so immature they can't handle any opposing viewpoint. And they've been given license by the Democratic Party to behave like authoritarians? Or, I mean, is that a fair distillation? Or how do you explain what's happened?
I guess. I mean, how I would explain it is that there was an academic theory that arose in the 1990s called queer theory that came out of postmodernism. And the essence mm-hmm. of postmodernism is that material reality doesn't exist and that it's all a social construct. Out of that came queer theory, which says that biological sex doesn't exist and that it's a social construct, and that spread like wildfire, and that's where we are now. And that's why the queer theorists had to invent the word transgender, which doesn't actually mean anything, because if the queer theorists tried to tell ordinary Americans across the political spectrum that sex isn't real, they would have been laughed at and ridiculed, and rightly so. So they invented the word transgender. Now, as for what's going on college campuses and throughout society, it's difficult for me to say because I was in college in the early 1990s. And at that time, we were still having a robust debate about all sorts of things. I studied political science. I had a professor who actually made the argument in the classroom that women and Black people should never have been given the right to vote because women are too emotional and because Black people are too stupid to vote. That was his argument. That's what he believed. I thought those things were outrageous. But I was glad, you know, if he thought that, I was glad to hear him say it so that I could construct an argument to oppose it, right? But we can't do that anymore because we're not allowed to talk and we're not allowed to hold controversial opinions or speak them. And I was in college at the time when political correctness came on the scene, and I thought that was terrible. As a leftist and a feminist, I thought political correctness was a terrible development. Because we need to be able to air our views. And if people have opposing views, we need to be able to construct arguments in order to have intelligent discussions, in order to have public policies that are grounded in intelligence and rationality.
And now, you know, people like you have your own category, too, that you've been relegated to. You're a TERF, right?
Yeah.
Trans exclusionary radical feminist. How do you respond? Yeah, the TERFs. It's the TERFs and the Jets and the Sharks. The TERFs. How do you guys respond? Do you respond to that? You say, well, where they see us as a threat, and you see yourselves as like if anybody is going to sort of rebalance the debate here and reestablish a debate, it's going to be people coming from our perspective. I mean, do you sort of wear that mantle, take on that responsibility?
It's controversial, and I will not call anyone a TERF because it was invented as a slur against women who speak out on, you know, for ourselves. And so a lot of women still reject it and say that it's a slur and it's the equivalent of, okay, now I'll go into profanity. It's the equivalent of bitch, right? Mm-hmm. But I think that the term TERF has value in today's political climate. And what I say in my book, as you said, I wrote a book called The Abolition of Sex, How the, quote, transgender agenda harms women and girls. If being a TERF means that I stand up for women and girls and for public policy that is grounded in material reality and rationality, I'm proud to hold the label.
And what do you think of this move to, number one, well, let's take them in part. One is the idea that children, girls and boys, prepubescent children should be determining their gender identity, and that would go so far as to initiate surgical changes.
So I think that it's child abuse. I think that it is literal child abuse for children to be able to so-called consent to life life-changing and often life-threatening hormones and surgeries. I think it's absolutely outrageous that our society is doing this. I also think that it ought to be a national scandal, and I do not understand why it isn't.
And minor attracted persons, or the mainstreaming of pedophilia?
Right. There are efforts to get pedophilia literally included in the LGBTQIA+++++ as a legitimate sexual orientation. I also think that's completely outrageous. I think that the gay rights movement spent a lot of time persuading ordinary mainstream Americans that gay people are not pedophiles, which is true. Gay people are not pedophiles. Right. And that was hard work for the gay rights movement to do, and it succeeded, and I'm glad that it succeeded. And now that's all being undone by the idea that pedophilia can be a legitimate sexual orientation. I think it's completely homophobic. All of gender identity, all of transgender is misogyny, it's homophobia, and it's child abuse.
She is Kara Danski, president of the U.S. chapter of Women's Declaration International. She seeks to promote the Declaration on Women's Sex-Based Rights. She's also the author of the book, The Abolition of Sex, How the Transgender Agenda Harms Women and Girls. Kara Danski, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you. And she joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. See Larry Elder, Brandon Tatum, Alex Berenson, and many more at Freedom Summit Chicago. Tickets available at freedomsummitchicago.com.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Here's another Democrat socialist politician mugged by reality, literally. Congresswoman Karen Bass. She was a shortlister for Mr. 10%'s VP. She's out of California. She's also one of the two finalists to be the next mayor of Los Angeles, along with the businessman out there, Rick Caruso. That could be a very interesting race. You want to see a reckoning? If Rick Caruso, sort of a Republican-leaning businessman, wins the mayor's race in L.A., it will be because of the lawlessness that the left has unleashed on America's cities, including L.A.
And he's got the money to do it.
He does. He's a billionaire. Bass had her home burglarized.
Oh, I shouldn't. I'm not laughing.
No.
The irony is.
Right. Yeah, and she's, of course, you know, a Black Lives Matter sympathizing, decarceration, non-prosecution, Democrat socialist. She said this spring how safe she felt in walking around her neighborhood on a scale from 1 to 10.
10 being?
Very safe.
10. 10?
No. Oh, this spring, 10.
Okay. Now?
Now? I did feel safe until my safety was shattered, like so many Angelinos. Well, right. Yeah. I did feel safe until my safety was shattered. Right. And so because that is such a life-altering event, even if it's nonviolent, even if you're, you know, your home is robbed when you're not there. Yeah. Shattered. I did feel safe until my safety was shattered. So I guess the point is to say we should try and prevent people's safety from being shattered or worse. Does that seem straightforward? That's what we're trying to do in Illinois. And thankfully, because people have started to perk up and pay attention, this is what's happening in this state, or what's poised to happen January 1 with this no cash bail defenestration of police legislation that Pritzker signed. It's a national discussion now, and it's dominating the discourse on politics in this state, as well it should. Winnebago County Sheriff Gary Caruana is one of the public officials who's decided to opine on the topic. Two Democrat county state's attorneys, Jim Glasgow and Jim Rowe and Kankakee, filed suit against the Safety Act to enjoin it, arguing it as unconstitutional on various sort of legal grounds. This was Friday. We'll see how that suit progresses through the system. So here's Will County, Winnebago, I should say, County Sheriff Gary Caruana, just doing a little five-minute video to explain to Winnebago County residents, you know, this is the greater Rockford and the greater Rockford area, to explain the Safety Act to them, the implications. We keep hearing from law enforcement professionals, police chiefs, county sheriffs, district attorneys, Republicans and Democrats. Just keep that in mind when you hear the misdirection plays from Pritzker and Lightfoot, when you hear the assertions of fear-mongering and propagandizing, racism. Sure. Okay. Everybody, Republican, Democrat, sheriff, prosecutor, radio talk show host, regular citizen, anybody who expresses any concern about what's actually contained in the legislation, the implications of it, as we see play out in Chicago on a daily basis, we're all those things. Okay. That's what you're going to go with. And that's what they're going to go with. Again, you've heard them on this show. You've seen them in commercials that my PAC has done. But hear it again from a county sheriff who has a community in Rockford in particular that has a bit of a crime problem, violent crime problem, too, and has for some time, you know.
Now, mind you, a suspect, these are the crimes that we will have to let them out. Aggravated battery, robbery, burglary, hate crimes, aggravated DUI, vehicular homicide, drug-induced homicide, drug offenses including drug trafficking and delivery of fentanyl. Fentanyl is a very dangerous drug. You can overdose very easily on it. In fact, people do, and we assist them by administering Narcan to them several times. Intimidation, kidnapping, second-degree murder, aggravated fleeing, and threats to public officials. Without cash bail, defendants who commit these crimes go free. See a problem? I certainly do.
Do you? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line. He goes on to delineate a couple of the ways in which the law inhibits law enforcement and the prosecution of people who commit crimes, for example.
If they don't show up for their first court date, we'll issue basically a piece of paper, a notice to appear to them. We have to go find them. My deputies are going to have to go find them. Say, hey, listen, you missed your court date, and here's the new court date. You must show up. And then if they don't show up that second time, then a warrant can be issued for them. But then we're going to have to go find them again and look for them. The process is too encumbering. What this is doing, again, is putting the victims basically having no rights. They can be intimidated. They could have experienced physical harm and worse.
Here's what Winnebago County Sheriff Gary Caruana says about the Safety Act.
I want to make sure that you're safe. This law is a failure. It allows criminal defendants to go roam the streets. Again, it's putting the alleged victims at risk.
And what's going to happen in Winnebago County, as you've heard from other sheriffs and prosecutors about what's going to happen in their counties on January 1, if this goes into effect?
Let me guess.
What's going to happen January 1st? My daily population is roughly 800. Sometimes 850, I let half of them go. That's 400 people that should be incarcerated that will be on the street.
And what does Pritzker say?
Says that we're trying to get moms who steal diapers for their children released so they're not incarcerated because they don't have the ability to make bond, make bail.
Can he be more out of touch? You have to, you know, to order even to get arrested and charged. 500 or more. I mean, the what you're stealing has to be worth $500 or more.
The county jails around the state are, does anyone believe this, are full of moms who were arrested and incarcerated for stealing diapers for their kids? Is that what you think? Who thinks that?
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment.
Again, from Winnebago County Sheriff Gary Caruana. Repetition for emphasis.
So what's going to happen January 1st? My daily population is roughly 800. sometimes 850, and let half of them go. That's 400 people that should be incarcerated that will be on the street. This is a very, very serious problem. And you know what? At the end of the day, I'm trying to protect our community, protect your family and yourself.
It doesn't sound like somebody who's grandstanding for political reasons. He seems genuinely concerned about public safety in his community.
Champaign County State's Attorney Julia Wright is the president of the Illinois State's Attorneys Association. She met with Dem legislators last week to urge changes to the legislation. She's a Dem. We're concerned that people who are in danger to who are a danger to the public will not be detained. Is that simple enough? I mean, can you boil it down anymore? We're concerned that people who are a danger to the public will not be detained. She said, Champaign County, State's Attorney Julia Wright, her estimate is that 25% of Champaign County's roughly 300 inmates awaiting trial will be released. So, you know, you have hundreds of people that are going to be released. Again, the state's attorneys, the sheriffs are telling you this, and they're explaining who is to be released in terms of what have they been charged with. This is as straightforward as it can be. They are telling you at a date certain, this is what is going to happen, and you don't need to be a lawyer or a sheriff to understand the implications. So, seems to me that's a big question on the November ballot. Because I know there's a scuttlebutt going around. I mentioned this earlier, that, and you sort of, Jim Day, who writes in the Champaign News Gazette about this and about Ms. Wright's, the Champaign County State's Attorney, you know, meeting with Democrat legislators, trying to massage some things. You cannot put perfume on this pig. And the only way you get it repealed or changed so substantially that it doesn't present any of the dangers that you're hearing it will guarantee is to have a Republican governor who makes this a priority and who uses the bully pulpit to pressure the General Assembly to end this nonsense. Who has an attorney general, by the way, since the Will and Cook County State's attorneys have sued Pritzker and the attorney general, suing the state to enjoin this. If you have an attorney general who's a Republican, Tom DeVore, a governor who's a Republican, Darren Bailey, who says this is the only thing we're going to do. First order priority, stop this from being implemented. Gather all the prosecutors and all the sheriffs from all 102 counties and put an end to this once and for all. You have from November 8th to Jan 1, and you have a veto session in between. You have the prospect of a new administration being inaugurated in January, assuming that these victories happen. And that's the way you put a stop to it. It's the only way. I mean, barring rolling the dice on a state Supreme Court that rules it unconstitutional and and lower courts that are willing to enjoin it until it would reach the high court in the state. That's a big gamble. Take the power that is in your hands to make this decision at the ballot box. Don't leave it in the hands of judges. Patrick, Northwest Side.
Hi, I was wondering if, you know, they'll keep that as a polling place after this law goes into effect. The jail.
Oh, the jail. Yeah. Thanks for the call, Patrick. Tim in Rochelle.
Hey, Dan. I just called to say that if this is my fault. I'm a couch potato, which means I'm a family man. I'm a guy who has a job. I pay my taxes. I do what I'm supposed to do. And I watch this garbage happening day in and day out by the Democratic Party, just making our world Sodom and Gomorrah or worse. And I don't do anything about it. So I've decided to do something about it. And we're gonna have a rally. We're gonna have a rally at the end of the month. I've helped some. You know, I've got some organizations involved to help me get a rally together, to just get together and start going after this immorality, this dishonesty, and this evil that the Democrats are pushing. And I hate to just say one political party, because I know as a Republican, our party has problems too. But I'm guilty for this. We that sit and watch TV or watch the crime in our neighborhoods and do nothing about it, this is our fault. We let these people gain power and silence us, and it's our fault. If you want to be silenced, like it's like the old saying, you know, for evil to spread, good men have to do nothing, and I'm doing nothing. So I've decided to do something. So
good.
I'll call back your producer and tell him what's going to happen at the end of the month, because I don't want to, you know, this isn't a promotion.
Yeah, but you can always call on Open Mic Friday too
for
and
sure.
promote it. We're
yeah,
here.
Let us know. Yeah, I mean, we're, you know.
People are interested and they want to do something.
Let's go to take up these issues. Thanks for the call, Tim. Be an opinion leader. Organize. Kalita in Lubbock, Texas.
Hi there. Actually, this is kind of odd. I meant to call a show, but not this show. But it's kind of—it's the same topic. It's law, and it's legal, and it worked here. So I wanted to tell you some things that I saw. Okay, so in my—I was a student in a master's program at Texas Tech University. And first of all, you can go around the legislation. You can go around. You need, like you were saying, the sheriffs. You need the county people. If I don't know if y'all have county commissioners there. Mm-hmm. Or how you're set
county
up.
Board, yeah.
And, mm-hmm. Yeah, okay, county board. And then just the people. That's all it takes. You can go right around these folks, because here's what we did. At Texas Tech in my master's program, our project for a group of us in the class was to get a veterans treatment court going. And that's what's wrong. All these, if they're going to release people, they're going to release dangerous people because they're in a system that they can never get out of once you get into it. You know, you go into prison, you're supposed to do your time and get out, but no, you're on probation forever. You have to pay money when you can't get a job. I mean, it's a vicious cycle, you know. And so if you can treat people, I think long term, if you can treat people, you know, this is looking far ahead, of course, not the immediate issue you have,
right?
But you can, that it can be done, because we got it done here. And they'll say, oh, we don't have funding for that. There's funding, believe me.
We got
it funded for 5 years.
Yeah, thanks for calculating. I'm all for that. You know, we've profiled programs like John Ponder's Hope for Prisoners and other programs at Pastor in Georgia that do a great job with ex-offenders, getting them on the straight and narrow when they do get out. So I'm all for that, whatever works, and programs around the country that should be replicated and scaled. But as you know, she indicated, the first thing you have to do is remove people who are habitual violent offenders. And this law prevents us from removing them from civil society until they get the help, attitude adjustment that's required for them to live peacefully in civil society. Again, this is straightforward stuff. This is basics here. And this is the problem that Pritzker and Lightfoot have, is because people get it. And I think they get the scam that's being run on them.
Listen to podcasts of Dan and Amy from the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.